Bike Tourist Podcast. Welcome to Bike Tourist Podcast, show number 3. My name is Gabriel, and if you are new to this podcast, well, grab a chair and join us in the ever-increasing base of listeners. We have around 300 people subscribed to the show since it began last month. To all of you, thank you, thank you. It means a lot. I have titled today's show, The Touring Machine. It is my intention to explore different alternatives for selecting a touring bike, so we will cover a few pointers here. Then we will move on into some vital accessories needed as basic equipment, and we will concentrate on fast and loaded touring. As for supported touring, the vehicle can carry all things needed from location to location. And also we will have a little comment on recumbent bikes. So today's show is going to be a little bit interesting. So let's move into today's show topics. Okay, so what makes a touring bike? To understand that, let's take a closer look at its closest cousins, the road bike and the mountain bike. The road bike is made as light as possible for obvious reason, and it is speed and aerodynamics. Most of them are fitted with 700cc thin tires for low rolling resistance, low spoke count, relatively short wheelbase, etc. On materials, you can find a full crop of material there, from chromoly to aluminum to carbon to titanium. The crank system is geared for speed, and most have two front chain rings and some have triple chain rings. Depending on the brand, it may or may not include brazons. They are made to be used specifically on asphalt, and some tolerate more than other rough terrain. The riding position is crouched for aerodynamics. You know, this is it. On the other hand, mountain bikes are made for off-road conditions, trails, etc. They may come unsuspended, which are rare these days, but they still are there. You can look for them on the internet. They are front suspended, that all are also called hardtails, and fully suspended, meaning that have suspension on the fork and on the rear triangle. Most of them are equipped with 26 inch tires, but there are varieties with 29 inches front and 26 inches rear tire and full 29 inches on both tires. They have a rather shorter wheel base than the road bike, and the crank system is better suited for climbing. Many come equipped with V brakes or disc brakes, and may have some brazons depending on the bike and depending on the material of the bike. The riding position is more upright than a road bike, but it will depend on the kind of riding that you're going to do. For example, there is single track, downhill, and all mountain. Let's talk about the weakness of the road bike for touring purposes, which is the main topic of this podcast. The weakness of the road bike for touring lies mainly on its frame. It is simply not designed to carry heavy loads beside the rider itself. Also, carbon bikes are too delicate for the task, with the added aggravator of not having brazons. You know, if you have checked the internet and seen how carbon bikes frames are made, you should be aware that you cannot solder anything on it. It has to have some way of attaching stuff to the bike, and this, most of this is built in. But if some manufacturer takes the time to make a carbon bike, it's because they want a lightweight. The moment they start installing things, the idea is lost. So most of them are just plain carbon, with metal here and there in the essential parts. So you cannot install racks in there. There might be models of carbon bikes that might have raisins, but these are rare. If you know of some, you can mention here in the podcast. You can send an email or call the phone and leave a audio message and tell us about it. We'll discuss it here. This is your outlet. Okay, so you cannot install much equipment on the carbon bike. To add to that a loaded bike with a less than ideal road, you know, and you have a recipe for disaster, you know. Imagine that you are having 60 or 70 pounds of gear from your tour, and you hit a pothole. You know, it happens. It happens even if you are not loaded. So, you know, it's not good. So, also, there's another thing. The crouching position that the road bike uses just wastes too much energy from the rider, and it wreaks havoc on the rider's hands, even with gloves. You know, been there, done that. The road gearing cannot handle a loaded bike also. You know, the gearing of the road bike is more oriented for speed, you know, for going fast. It's not for carrying a load. You know, you can try it. You know, this is a free world. You can try it. You know, if you're successful and you have a strong knees, well, good for you. But for the rest of us, especially those of us that are over our 40s, this is not a very appealing idea, you know. Also, the road bikes, most of them come with a standard with a dual chain ring, and meaning that you have a less choice to adjust to a hill, you know. Okay, so what about if you have a loaded bike, you know, big panels and stuff, and you hit a big 9-grade climb? Yep, I thought so. Even with a triple chain, the stress on the bike frame can make it fail. And it will be dark, rainy, cold, and no cell phone signal when that happened. You know, this is Murphy's Law at best. Add to that the low spoke count of most road bike wheels, you add that, and I have ready my popcorn to see what happens if just one of those spokes breaks. You know, it's not funny, you know, the wheel will be all over, you know. If you're going to use make a wheel for touring, make sure you have at least 32 to 36 spokes on the tire, so it will hold the weight and more evenly. Okay, you know, I went over the bars on my bike, and I don't wish it happens to anyone. You know, I almost lost function on my left arm. I still hurts after 6 months. I cannot fully extend it. So do yourself a favor. Okay. Now let's move to the weakness of the mountain bike for touring. Okay. The weakness of the mountain bike is mainly its riding position and the shorter wheelbase, you know. For the short wheelbase, you know, the problem is that if you install a set of large panniers, you know, there are a lot of panniers out there. You know, there are small, medium, large. But if you install big ones, because you are going to have, you know, your whole stereo system with you for taking on the road. Yes, but you know what I mean. You may have problems with heel strike in the bags, you know. Also, if you have a fully suspended bike, like I do, the selection of pannier racks is very, very limited. There are some out there that are specifically made for dealing with these things, you know. But you have to find them, you know. I know some of them, you know. If you want to know about them, just email me and I will tell you about it. You know, for those of you that are raising your hands, yeah. I seen those seat post rack that are designed to carry panniers on a suspended mountain bike. Forget about it. You know, most of them have a load limit of just 25 pounds, so it limits what you can carry. Also, the gearing might help to tame hills, but the more upright riding position on the mountain bike is a headwind nightmare. You know, even with no load, you know, I once went to a training ride on a road near my house, and the headwind was so strong that I could not get past 9 miles per hour. You know, I just had my hydration pack on me, nothing else. You know, I had to turn back. You know, it was too much. You know, it was too much. So imagine that you are loaded. You know, when you are upright, you may understand that you are more comfortable than when you are crouching. But the problem is the headwind. You know, for the headwind, you are a wall, and it will hit you hard and will try to keep you there, you know? So, beside the headwind, you know, the mountain tires offer too much rolling resistance on asphalt. Most of you know that, you know? And I've seen many people that know that, you know, but they still do it, you know? I've seen many people. You know, the trend is getting these mountain bikes, you know, from big stores, you know. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to mention them here. This is not advertising, free advertising. So, these tires need to be changed for road tires. Fortunately, for mountain bikes, there are a lot. There is no shortage of tire selection in this department, you know. There are many, many tires that you could choose for road riding for a mountain bike. I've done that with my bike, and they make a lot of difference, a world of difference from stock tires to road tires, you know. Also, you have to consider also what kind of slick you're going to use, you know. By slick, I mean a road tire. There are slicks that are low pressure, and there are high pressure slicks. I still have them, you know, but since I fell from my bike while using them, I'm a bit reluctant to put them back. They are good tires, don't get me wrong. I had the Kenda Quest tires. They run at 100 PSI. You know, there are a couple problems with that. You have to carry a CO2 a pump, because there's no way with a hand pump to push that amount of air into a tire. You know, the pump might say 250 pounds. Get out of here, you know. You can't do that. You can't do that. So a CO2 pump is an essential tool to have around if you're going to use a high pressure slicks. The one I'm using now, a Panaracer. The Panaracer, this one runs from 50, I think, 50 to 85 PSI. So it gives you option of going high pressure for less rolling resistance. The ride will be a little bit harsher, but since my bike is suspended, it's not much of a problem. Well, if you're going to be on less than a linear road, you can lower the pressure, and yeah, you can still have it. So, also another thing that the mountain bike has that doesn't help on touring is the flat bars. You know, the flat bars don't offer different hand positions, so you will get your hands numb quite fast. You know, being there, felt that, believe me. you know, and those of you that ride that might ride a mountain bike on the road, you know, they might know what I'm talking about. Yeah, so let me talk about brakes. Okay, it's not like, you know. Okay, let's be specific. These brakes, disc brakes, are good for a number of reasons. For example, if you break a spoke in your wheel, if you have a disc brake, you know, the tire will get unbalanced, but you can still drive the bike and you can still brake and get somewhere safe to repair your tire, you know, your wheel rim. If you have a B brake or cantilever brake, as soon as you break the spoke, you're out of business because the tire will start rubbing on the brakes. So if you have a mountain bike and you have the facility of adding these brakes, you plan to use your mountain bike for touring, it's a good consideration you should make. And talking about disc brakes, I prefer mechanical disc brakes because, you know, they are easier to set up, easier to repair, and most important, they won't leak. The hydraulic disc brakes are great. You know, I'm not downplaying them. You know, they have a very good modulation for controlling your braking. In a very subtle way, but this call for situation where, for example, you are doing some mountain biking nearby, or you are on a race or something that, you know, you have your car there, you know, the brakes go wrong, then you mount your car and you go back home. But if you are going to be out there in the road, far from home, in the middle of nowhere, you know, a hydraulic brake going bad is a bad thing. So you see, with all the mountain bike, there are a lot of disadvantages for touring, but not all is lost, you know. So you say, so let's use a mountain bike for touring. You could, but there is a better choice. And that better choice is the touring bike. Also, you know, what is a touring bike? Okay, a touring bike, as the name implies, is a bike made for touring. You know, this bike takes the best elements of both bikes. You know, it's a stronger yet lightweight frame. You know, it's made in a different way for carrying a load. Also, it offered the rider a better riding position, you know, not as crouched as a road bike, not as upright as a mountain bike. Also, the handlebar is similar to the road bike, but the stem is a bit higher, so giving you a more upright riding position. As for brazons, a serious touring bike will have them more than some. You know, there are practically play all over the place support for installing gear on this bike. So if you are going to do tour and you come from a road biking community, you have to clear your mind of all the ideas that you carry from road biking to touring bike. To bike for tour, you know. This is, for example, I've seen road bikers not putting on the bike safety equipment just because it weighs 50 grams or 60 grams. This is ridiculous, you know. It's your life you're talking here. It's your life. So, and also your comfort. So if you're going to be back there on the road, you better have your bike equipped. Okay. The touring bike has a longer wheelbase, so you can fit in very big panniers, you know, and you will have no heel strike, you know, since the wheelbase is wider. It's made for that. When they make this frame, they are thinking about the intended use, which is touring. Okay, so touring bikes are designed to be comfortable, as you might be putting like 50 to 100 miles a day. Yes. You're going to be putting 50 to 100 miles a day if you're going to do a tour, a real tour, you know? Because, you know, I've seen, for example, this tour that I'm going to be participating on October 1st that I mentioned on the Intershow News number one. This is only 67 miles, so it would be less than a century. Yet, I've seen many people, friends of mine that rode last year that same route, and they were just beat up, you know, on their road bikes. You know, they were beat up, you know. I know one of them that he simply, after the 67 miles, he just had to rest for 4 days, you know. If you're going to do a tour, you know, 67 miles is just a typical tour. And you tomorrow you do the same, and the day after that, and the day after that, and the day after that, depending on how long is your tour. So you need to be comfortable, and you need to save energy. Crouching wastes energy. Upright wastes energy in the way of wind resistance. A tour bike has the best of both worlds. Also, touring bikes offer another advantage, you know, because they have a wider gear range. So you can see that there are 27 and 30 speed models are not uncommon on the touring bikes. You can go to the big names on cycling, on cycling brand, on bicycle brands. I'll be mentioning a couple models in the future shows, you know, depending on your feedback and stuff. If you request, I'll do good research and show it here. Since you have all these gears, you know, 27 to 30, you know, some people say, why so many speeds? Yeah, why so many speeds? I'm going to say that you can go as fast, you know, fast like a road bike, and you can climb like a mountain bike, and you can have everything in between, you know, the alternatives. And since you are carrying a load, you better have a variety on what you can do. You need to adapt to different situations, because, for example, if you have a mountain bike gearing for climbing, yeah, but what about the downhill? You know, you can go down as fast, maybe 32 miles an hour. The fastest I have done with road tires on a mountain bike is 35 miles per hour, and it was like a 7 or 8 grade downhill. And the higher speed I could get with my gearing was 35 miles per hour. You know, it's not that I like to go fast, you know. Yeah, I like to go fast, yeah. But I'll say there's some safety involved. But, you know, 35 miles per hour was my top speed. With a road bike, you can approach that, maybe go faster than that. But when the time comes for getting a climb with all the equipment, then you'll hit their rock bottom. So having all these gears on the bike, you know, it's a blessing. It's a blessing. So that's why they put them there. So I have said most of what I wanted to say about touring bikes. But I also, for those of you who are curious about this kind of bike, as I mentioned on the introduction of the show, I'm going to take a little moment to talk about another alternative for touring, which is the recumbent bike. The recumbent bike or bends, as they are commonly known, are very comfortable alternative for touring. You know, you are sitting on a chair. You know, you can. There are several kind of recumbent bikes. The long wheelbase, which are you know, very big bikes, very comfortable bikes, and they make good steeds for touring. There are also short wheelbase, and there are out there very good short wheelbase models that are very good for touring. As I said, there are different kind of models. You know, the main advantage of the bent, you know, I'm meaning the recumbent bent, is the riding position. You know, you are a chair laid back and your feet do the work. There's no pressure in your hands because, you know, there are two kind of steering in these kind of bikes. You know, you can have over the seat steering and under the seat steering. In under the seat steering, your arms are closer to your body. You're not resting, falling down. You know, just grabbing the handlebar, and you have to control the brakes and the gearing over there. And also over the seat steering, you have your hands up, but you are not putting pressure on them. They are just hanging from the handlebar. So this is good. You know. This is the main reason I'm getting one of them for touring. You know, because of my elbow, as you know, I fell, I break my elbow, I have more titanium than a bike, literally on my arm. I have a lot of screws and plates and nails and stuff. You know, so I need this kind of bike. I have tried them, and I like them. If possible, I'm trying to get one before this year. Could be once I get my bike, I could talk about more about them. If you know more about recumbents, I will put some links on the webpage. So just send me an email, biketourist@podomatic.com, and let me know, and I just put the links over there. So you can go and get them. So now let's move to basic equipment. Basic equipment for touring. I mentioned before that you need protection equipment. But now that I have them listed here, I have a terrible memory, so I wrote it down for helping on organizing myself to the show. So let's move to it. First thing you need, racks. Yes. Racks is where you install your panniers, which are the bags that where you carry your stuff. You can get racks for the front wheel as well as the rear wheel. Some of you say, "Oh, no, I just need a rack for the rear, you know, with the front. I don't want to load it or it looks weird." You know, don't underestimate the front rack. Remember that you need to balance the weight on the bike. And when you are sitting on the bike, most of your weight goes on the rear tire. So if you put like 50 or 60 pounds of gear along with your own weight, you know, this tire is getting much pressure and the possibility of bursting at the first thorn or whatever is more probable. Also, it put more strain on the tire, so it wears faster. So if you put a front rack to your bike, then you can move some of this stuff there, and you can balance the weight. And the bike also will feel more secure with the weight distributed in the front and the back. Also, panniers, you know, individually. You know, as I mentioned, they are the bags where you put your stuff. They hang on the sides of the bike, and they come in different sizes, small, medium, and large. So this is where you carry the little comforts of the loaded touring. So they are not to be taken lightly. There are models that are made of cloth. There are some that made of some kind of plastic. There are some that say that they are waterproof. There are many kinds of panniers that you can get, and usually you get what you pay for. You know, if you don't want to spend much money on a pannier and get a model, you know, it's a pannier. You know, this pannier costs $125. It won't cost $50. I just save over $50. Yeah, you save the $50, but you're going to pay the price. You know, because there are some weak link over there. You might run if you get them used at some website. You know. Discounted price or something, that good for you. Also, cooking equipment is necessary, that you carry a small stove for preparing your meal, because most of you are thinking of maybe instead of camping out, you are planning to go to a hotel, and then once you are established, you go up there, you get a restaurant. But sometimes, you know, you don't get lucky, you know. You get to this small town, and the hotel is not what you expected. There are surprises when you arrive, so you have to move on, maybe to a camping area in the same city, and you need something to heat up your food. So having a small stove with you is a good idea. And also sometimes you can get a hotel, but don't you cannot find where to eat. So I don't think they are going to let you prepare your food in the hotel room, but there are alternatives. You know, if you are a bike tourer, you have to prepare for anything. So also another equipment that you should carry is tent. You know, what about if the hotel you find belongs to Norman Bates? Yeah, you know, you get the idea. Tents for touring are specially made. There are many companies that specialize on doing equipment for touring. And they are specially made, as I said, and they are expensive. But, you know, this price you pay gives you something back, something in return. Because they are very lightweight. They are very easy to install, very easy to take apart, and they don't take much space on your bike. So with good planning, you can have the cake and eat it too. Another basic equipment is lights. You know, don't you ever think of leaving home without lights on your bike. So in some states, it is a legal requirement for riders to have lighting equipment on the bikes. But if you think about it, it makes sense. You know, in my bike, I have a LED torch in the handlebar, plus a rear red flasher installed on my rear rack. I have bulb red blinkers on each tire. So this, when I'm riding at night, this bike looks like a Christmas tree, you know, in full darkness. You know, the people just stop to look and say, what's that, you know? So, yeah, well, I don't care. I am visible. And a head turner, to be frank. Also, another thing that you should carry with you is mace or pepper gas. You know, this for self-defense. You know, I'm not talking about here. You know, I am a believer on the goodness of humanity. So I'm not talking about people trying to get advantage of you. I'm talking about animals like dogs. You know. You know, when I fell, it was because of dogs. You know, two dogs attacked me. You know, they put me in a situation that I could not. That I had to do a heartbreaking, you know, because there are some cars coming at the crossing, so I fell. But if I had something to fend off those dogs, you know, today I would be okay. You know, I also think that you learn from your experiences, but sometimes the price is too high. So. You can get a belt holster, you know, like a policeman. You know, next time you see a bicycle policeman, just take a closer look to what he's carrying with him, and you'll see that he has this can of mace with him, and he has this special holster. I happen to see one today and a police supply. It's like it made of cloth, and then you, the can just slides on it. It's very easy to take out of your waist, and defend yourself from the dogs. And this is carry it because you will need it. You know, you don't know when you're riding, your mind is looking at the panorama, and then boom, there's this big dog jumps on you. You know, it's not funny. Okay, other equipment you can carry. And I think this is just overkill, you know, because you will carry that. It's a cell phone, you know. Some people say, no, I'm not going to carry a phone, you know. I'm vacation and getting away from it all. Yeah, but getting away from it all doesn't mean being stranded in the middle of nowhere with no way to call. You know, this is just dumb, and you will forgive me. This is just dumb if you don't have a piece of equipment to call for help or for helping somebody else, you know. You know, it's not maybe you that have some problem on the road, but somebody else, and you can help. You can make a difference, you know. And this speaks good of bike tourists, and in the end, it will benefit all of us. And also, if you are carrying a laptop with you and you have you can post your, if you are running a journal, like a crazy guy on a bike or other site that make entries on the road, and if you have your phone and you have you can make entries to the website. If you're wealthy and have a data plan, I don't have a data plan, I don't plan to use. I just go to a internet cafe and upload my thing. Sorry for being cheap. Okay. Okay. You should carry maps for your intended route. And I don't mean one map now, and when I arrive to the next location, get another map to see where I'm going to go. No. Just get all the maps you are, or your intended route. You know, see a big map, okay, I'm going to go here, and make arrangement for getting those maps, you know. Plan. If you plan ahead, you will have a little less headaches, you know, because you can plan ahead and the roads and stuff, and also alternate roads in case you find some problem on the road. You might have a plan A, plan B. Okay, let's move to the next equipment. This is for amateur radio operator or hams, you know. I am a ham. I'm a Whiskey Papa 3 Bravo Mike, if you're a ham radio operator. So I'm with you. If you're not a ham radio operator, you don't know what you're missing. If you carry, for example, a triple band handy talkie, like I do when I go out, you might get communications where cell phones are dead. You know, there are no cell phones everywhere, you know. But you can almost hit some repeater from any distance. There is a repeater directory published by the ARRL, which is the Amateur Radio Relay League, which is a repeater directory, and it's listed by state. So you can program those repeaters along your route, and in case you have some problem, you just switch to a repeater and call for help, you know, in case you don't have a cell phone service. Also, I'm coming to a close of this list of stuff. Carry energy bars or gels, you know. Many of you are not familiar with gels. I was not familiar until I started running on the road. I just started reading what is stuff, you know, gels. Who gels for what? Energy. Yeah, they work. They work. I can vouch for that. Last Saturday I was doing a training ride. I went like 32 miles in 3 hours, you know, for training the local bike path. And I started in the middle of the afternoon. Here in Puerto Rico, we have high humidity and the sun was terrible. So I experience close to a bunk, no? So the difference I had in my handlebar handlebar bag, I had a flask with gel, energy gel. So I just took a shot and drink some water, and I was back in business. You know, if you are in the road, you know, and there's the heat is unbearable, and you run out of energy, this will be a lifesaver. So consider it. And also, if you send me email and ask for it, I might list what I use. I have to use the several different kind of gels, for energy gels, for different amount of times. I have sell now for one in particular, but I can point you to places where you can do research and learn by yourself. So also I carry electrolyte capsules. You know why the electrolyte? So basically, it's like a I'm not going to mention any brand here. No, okay. So it's a drink for replenishing your electrolytes. Carrying those capsules actually supply your need for what you lose when sweating when you are riding. You might take, depending on the heat, you might take 1, 2, or 3 capsules an hour. You just complete the with water from your reservoir, you know, depending on what you use. If you use a water bottle, you use a hydration pack, and it's, you know, it's more cost effective and load effective than carrying bottles of that other stuff there besides the water you have. And talking about that, the other equipment I want to mention for closing is water. You know, get a big hydration pack and learn to live with it. You know, some people see the hydration pack and say, "Oh, no, this is too big. No, I just stick with the bottle." You know, a typical water bottle carry around from 24 to 30 ounces of water. And if you do some research, you will know that this quantity is enough for an hour. For an hour. If you carry 2 water bottles, it will be 2 hours. You know, you should hydrate, take a small amount of water every 15 minutes. You know, your mileage may vary. You know, you can try different amount of time. But I have found I have a big frame, you know, I have 6 feet, 5 inches, 212 pounds. So I can drink like 30 ounces. Middle-sized person might have like 24 ounces, it would be enough. You should not drink more than that in an hour, because you can run into problems. There is a condition called hyponatremia. You can search about it. Is even worse than being dehydrated. In this case, is where your electrolyte level in the body drops below certain level, your brain start to swell, and once this process start, there is no stopping. You die from it. So if you think that every time, I have read some people say, if you are thirsty, you already are dehydrated. You know, if you see sometimes races, you will see that the best performance are always made by people that are somewhat dehydrated, not much but somewhat. And the people that get a bunk are the people that start drinking. There's a moment they just lose consciousness and boom, that's it. So, if you get, for example, a hydration pack, I'm not recommending any brand. Mine is brand X. It cost me like $19, you know, not $40, $50, $60 I have seen. It's 100 ounces of water. And if you plant properly, if you use it properly, This 100 ounces of water can keep you hydrated for 4 hours. 4 hours, you know. This is for my body, for example. If you are smaller than me, it might last even 5 hours or 6 hours. It depends on your own. But, you know, you start to see the advantage of of having a hydration pack, you know. Also, if you are riding in a crouch position and you have this thing on your back, it will block you from the raisins, you know. This is just more to add. So, this is a fairly, you know, I mentioned like 11 items here. This is what I consider to be a basic equipment for touring. If you want to add something here, or are not with me on some of my choices, just let your voice be heard. Send me an email, bagtourist@podomatic.com, or you can call the telephone number 206-339-4425 and leave an audio message here. So this is all for now. You know, I've been running a little bit long on this show. As I mentioned, the email is biketourist@podomatic.com. No, so you can tell me about your bicycle setup, ask questions, etc. You know, remember, the dumbest question is the one that is never asked. So leave audio comments, like I said, call 206-339-4425. You know, I have this number. If it don't get used in a month, they just scrap this number from me. So use it. Call me, and you know, leave your message. You know, it's simple. You just call. It's like an answering machine. You just leave your message and hang up. You know, a couple seconds. Also, we have a couple interviews coming your way. You know, this is good. This is good. Very good interviews. And we are now in preparation, talking about the setting up stuff and equipment for doing internet interview. So check out the upcoming shows. Okay. Also, we will also have a show focused on nutrition, recovery, etc. You know, say, why nutrition? You know, you just go out there and eat whatever you can. Since you are riding, then you are going to sweat it up. So, you know, what I'm going to mention in that show is are things that make a difference on how you feel every day after long miles of touring. You know, as I mentioned, last Saturday I ran 32 miles, you know, quite fast. I had a bunk due to the sun, and I just had these electrolyte pills. I just swallowed them, had some water, I had some gel, and I was back in business. And I continued to do the job, you know. The day after that, I felt great, you know. I just got up early in the morning and to do stuff that I had to do, and I never felt a pain in my muscles. I also have a recovery drink after I do some workout, and since these things that you can get at your local vitamin shop, you know, you can get whey protein, which is good for rebuilding muscles. You can get creatine. We will be talking about that in the nutrition issue. There are many things that can help you stay healthy and fit during your tour. This will be on upcoming shows, so just keep an ear peeled. Okay, again, thank you very much for your support. You have, to all those people who subscribe, thank you very much. So, my name is Gabriel. This is Bike Touring Podcast. Until next time.
Bike Touring Podcast.